The ranks are beefed up by a substantial number of foreign militants.
Foreign fighters in the Philippines complicate the battle against militants. It's Tuesday, June 13th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, corruption activists are honored. Cambodia's growing technology sector. Cybercrime on the rise in Asia. Real cities become virtual. We go behind Broadway. It all starts now on VOA Asia. Foreign influence is adding an unwelcome new mystery to the Philippine government's battle against a violent Muslim group that some suspect is not even fighting for a religious cause. Armed forces of the Philippines say they have cut to remnants the Malte Group, a suspected terrorist organization on the southern island of Mindanao, after fighting it since May 23rd. They have killed scores and captured the parents of two brothers who started the group. But now Philippine officials suspect people from Muslim nations as close as Indonesia are fighting alongside it in the battle-torn city of Marawi and may be sending money as well. Among the 134 people who the presidential office says have been, quote, neutralized in strikes on Marawi, two Saudis, two Indonesians, two Malaysians, a Yemeni, and a Chechen were killed. Authorities in the Philippines have arrested other foreign nationals with suspected links to the Malte group and are looking for more Indonesians. Police in Indonesia, a largely Muslim country, have made their own arrests. Mystery about how much foreign help the Malte group gets and where and even for what reasons have frustrated the battle that has killed 13 Marines this month and affected more than 200,000 people, many who have fled to Marawi. Fabrizio Pizzato is a Taiwan Strategy Research Association fellow specializing in Asian political issues.
While we cannot positively say that the Malte group is specifically funded by foreign terrorist networks and sponsors, it can be said that they are certainly part of transnational terrorist networks. We cannot exclude future scenarios in which the ranks of the Malte or similar groups are beefed up by a substantial number of foreign militants, making the fight much harder for the Filipino government.
Philippine officials are calling the group Malte ISIS after the violent extremist network Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. The group has pledged allegiance to Islamic State and wears its signature garb, but it's not clear whether Islamic State has reciprocated. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte on Monday told an infantry division in Mindanao the fighting is now about drugs rather than religion. But Philippine troops started the battle last month by striking Malte group fighters in Marawi on suspicion they were colluding with Abu Sayyaf. The president is offering a bounty of $202,000 for the, quote, neutralization of an Abu Sayyaf leader who, as the armed forces says on its website, works as an emir of Islamic State in the Philippines. Rona Canoe is president of an international school and part of a political family in Mindanao City, where some of the Marawi refugees are staying.
We don't know what the deal is. I know that ISIS is claiming it, but we know the Malte group, and they're not religious or political in any way. I was born and raised here. None of these people are politically or religiously inclined when they get this bad.
U.S. advisors since 2002 have helped the Philippines detect terrorist threats in Mindanao, where violence involving Muslim rebels has killed about 120,000 since the 1960s. China offered $14 million worth of military aid, partly for counterterrorism work, and Malaysia has pledged its own support. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for gathering and sending us the story. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Pakistan says slain Chinese couple preached Christianity under guise of business. Japan seeks to expand arms deals with Southeast Asia. North Korea sees humanitarian aid as leverage. Singapore police arrest local female Islamic State suspect. Bangladesh trains girls to fight online predators. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's much more, on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Activists fighting corruption across the world shared their stories here in Washington on Capitol Hill, where they received recognition from the National Endowment for Democracy and pressed for support to continue their work. VOA's congressional reporter Catherine Gibson tells us about the honorees from Afghanistan and Guatemala.
Far from the troubled streets of Afghanistan, Khalil Parsa tells Capitol Hill not to give up on his country.
I need to return. I've been there a number of times.
Or the fight he helps lead against corruption. And because of the sacrifices Parsa has made, Washington is listening.
He got shot 9 times. Talk about tough. We are just in awe of this dedication.
And Parsa says he's not alone.
This is not just a danger for me, but for all activists fighting corruption in Afghanistan. Certainly I'm worried, but we all have to work together for democracy, rule of law, and accountability.
Awarded for his work alongside activists from Angola, Ukraine, Malaysia, and Guatemala, Parsa says those fighting corruption should seek each other out.
They need to support each other. They need to work together collectively to eliminate and fight corruption as we do day to day in Afghanistan.
These activists have reconstructed former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych's paper trail and revealed abuses in Angola's diamond trade, keeping corruption from undermining the rule of law and democracy, an effort the U.S. sees as crucial to support.
If America will not bring people together around freedom, human rights, and the rule of law, who will?
America was the last refuge for Claudia Escobar.
Humbly, I accept this award. In the name of the Guatemalan judges, I'm so sorry.
Forced to flee Guatemala with her family after she became a lead whistleblower against government corruption.
I realized that I had to leave the day that they took office because what they said is that I was causing a coup d'etat.
Escobar says it's up to the Guatemalan people to push for accountability.
We cannot really fight corruption if our institutions are weak. And this reform that is being discussed in the Congress right now has to do with judicial independence, with the way of electing judges. And that only will be possible if the sectors that are in my country get together and back up the proposition that is being discussed in the Congress right now.
Small signs of change, these activists say, bring hope amidst the danger. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Happening now in Asia, South Korea's President Moon has met with Japanese officials about a better resolution on the comfort woman issue to further Korean-Japanese ties. These historical issues refer to Korean women forced to work in Japan's wartime brothels. Stay up to date with VOA 60 online every day. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. More investment in infrastructure and good governance will be key to Cambodia's continuing economic success. That's according to the International Monetary Fund. The Cambodian economy has been in the top 10 fastest growing for the past 2 decades, helping the country to graduate to lower middle income status and sharply reduce poverty. The IMF expects it will grow by another 7% this year. VOA Khmer Service reporter Sophat Sung recently spent 4 months researching technology in Cambodia. He spoke with VOA's Steve Miller and discussed some of the challenges that startups have in Cambodia. Sung began by sharing why there appears to be a lack of trust between traditional business investors and emerging technology firms.
I think overall, everywhere, you know, the tech industry and the tech ecosystem is pretty new worldwide, I mean, except for Silicon Valley, which means for local investors, you know, tycoons have a lot of money. They've invested in properties, they've invested in tourism, different sectors, different industries, and they've seen returns. There's not much precedent in the small tech sectors that's emerging in developing countries, including in Cambodia. And that's part of the reason.
So what are some of the trends in Cambodia?
It's changing, it seems to be the case. And when I was there in January, and you start to notice that, and I suspected that in 2017, this year, that more of that trend was going to come. Because by now, early 2017, there are around 120 startups in the country. And so that's quite significant, you know, if you think of a small country like Cambodia.
Over what period of time?
Just in the last year
or
a few years. Yeah, in the last few years, yes.
Outstanding.
Yeah, so it's really starting because there's this growth of co-working spaces as well in Phnom Penh and in Siem Reap. But the big question is, what's next? Where do they move from just a startup to the being a viable business? And they need that investment. And that's why I think that would have been the next trend if investors start to notice. And so when I was there in January, I was just waiting for more of that news happening. And it did eventually happen in March. A bunch of different pieces happened, yeah.
What about those who are actually in charge of running these startups, who come up with these ideas that they want to see go through fruition? How do they feel about the changing landscape in Cambodia?
They're very optimistic, obviously, because as a context, in Cambodia elsewhere, startups have a 90% failure rate. So only a few will make it big. And I think that's really important to highlight, you know, with all the buzz. And so
is that one of the reasons, or one of the potential difficulties in getting more of your so-called tycoons to get involved with it? They're so used to real estate. They're so used to other kinds of, I would say, more steady type of investments that have a definitive ROI. If 90% of startups fail, then why give money?
You really hit on the point that I forgot to mention. So, you know, besides the fact that tech is so new, tech is also riskier. You know, investing in tech companies is much more risky. And from talking to a lot of people, not just in Cambodia, it's even in Asia generally. You know, and in any new sector, investors are a bit, you know, concerned about investing in tech companies because of the risky nature of the investment. But you know, as a result, the returns could be huge as well. And the promise, obviously, I think, for all these startups, despite the risk of failure, is that you could be the one who just grew large. You know, from a small Cambodian startup, you could become global, as Khmer Lot could. It's already hinting on that possibility. And investors are not just in Cambodia, but in the region, and they actually have to think of their strategy as that way. Because, as an example of Khmer Lot, the reason they got the investment is not of their potential growth in Cambodia itself. It's because of their regional potential growth. Because Cambodia is such a small market, all Cambodian startups have to have a global mindset. They really have to think about how big they can grow.
Sopat Sung reports on technology for the VOA Khmer service. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China's southern province of Guangdong is readying itself for the arrival of Typhoon Merbak, the second typhoon to hit China this season. At least 8 people were injured as the storm grazed the northeastern portion of Hong Kong, downing trees and dumping heavy rain. Follow the storm's progress and all of the big stories on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, Asia-Pacific nations are facing rising challenges posed by cybercrime and security breaches amid escalating economic costs from cyber attacks. Regional businesses and governments say policy reforms are needed against a backdrop of a fast-changing technological landscape and mounting vulnerabilities to cybercrime. Singapore has taken the regional lead to boost cybersecurity within the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, as well as promoting the island state's technical resources. Singapore and Australia have signed a cooperation agreement to stem cybercrime, with Australia also signing pacts to boost cooperation with Thailand and China. Australia's ambassador for cybercrime is Tobias Feakin in Bangkok. For official talks with the Thai government, he said regional cooperation was vital in the face of growing challenges posed by cybercriminal networks in Asia.
Criminals and nefarious actors can adapt and absorb all these things so much quicker than governments. So if we're not talking about it, sharing practice, best practice, and keeping on the move as well, then we'll soon find ourselves behind by quite a margin.
A 2016 report by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime warned cybercrime was growing in the Asia-Pacific region. UNODC Bangkok-based cyber technology analyst Alexandru Curciulo has said transnational crime accounts for the largest segment in cybercrime.
We have all types. We have the criminal element, which I would say is the biggest part. We have, of course, the corporate, and there is also the nation state. So there are many players in this area. So in terms of the criminal element, I think that, of course, they're always trying to leverage, you know, new technologies.
High-profile cyber attacks have raised the awareness for the need for improved safety and security. The May unleashing by computer hackers of the WannaCry ransom malware affected 200,000 organizations in 150 countries, including Thailand. Tobias Feakin says Australia, in pressing for an agreement with China, has accused China-based businesses of online intellectual property theft.
China is a huge economic partner. There are some areas that you know, there are some differences, and the fact that we got to the point of signing an agreement which said we agree to not conduct cyber-enabled intellectual property theft, I think that's a good point.
Exponential increase in mobile phone use and tablet devices have added to the risks. Our thanks to Ron Corbin in Bangkok for researching and sending us this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, Singapore has detained an assistant child care worker suspected of trying to join the Islamic State. This is the country's first woman citizen arrested on suspicions of Islamist radicalism. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, did you ever wonder what could be done with all of those street views and Instagram photos of your favorite city? Well, a group of techies thought that too, and they've taken all of that data and turned it into an amazingly detailed 3D city map, as we hear from VOA's Kevin Enix.
It looks a bit like a scene from The Matrix. Thousands of streaming data points slowly dissolve into shapes and familiar places. But this isn't some dystopian future. It is Zurich, Switzerland. Today.
Over a couple of years, we collected various amounts of data from them, aerial data, drone data, static webcams, and public available Flickr images. And we fused all of this information into one coherent 3D model at the moment. And we can add new and additional images all the time and create more enriched models of it.
Using artificial intelligence, the inventors dropped layer after layer of information into a computer and let it sync all those details. With each layer, the city map got a bit more detailed.
We try to find correspondences between pixels and images, and then these corresponding pixels, we can use a method called triangulation to actually estimate the depth of the 3D model so that we can create point clouds, individual points in 3D space, and to represent the 3D model. On top of that, we've created very efficient tools which are scalable to the entire city and very efficient so that we can create surface models for these for the entire cities in a couple of hours rather than what people were doing in a couple of weeks.
A map this detailed has all kinds of practical applications, but perhaps the most entertaining might be in the world of virtual reality, or as a way to use real cityscapes as a gaming platform.
In this project, we've built a 3D model of Zurich City by exploiting 4 terabytes of images, that is 3 million images. And by using the knowledge we automatically deduce in this project from this data, we can build a compressed model, a compressed 3D model that can then be used to walk through in real time, just like in a virtual game, for example.
The researchers say this much detail could also be used to do everything from noting free parking spaces to performing before and after weather damage analyses on buildings. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Broadway's highest honor is the Tony Awards, and they were presented Sunday in New York. The big winners were Dear Evan Hansen as Best Musical, Oslo for Best Play, and Hello, Dolly is the top musical revival. Recognition also went to a lot of people who work behind the scenes, like writers, directors, and designers. But there are some just as important who are not even eligible, like stage managers. Jeff London spoke with some of them about what they do.
They're usually in the wings, sitting at a desk covered with video monitors and lots of buttons and switches. And they're wearing a headset to communicate with the cast and crew.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back from dinner. The call is half hour. Half hour, please. This is your half hour call.
There's a reason the stage manager speaks into what's called the God mic. Ira Mont has it now at CATS.
I like to think of a stage manager as the chief operations officer of the corporation that is the show.
Donald Freed is behind the God mic for the Tony-nominated play Sweat.
I also like to think of the stage manager as the captain of the Enterprise.
And Karen Meek is production stage manager for another Tony-nominated work, the musical Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812.
I would call us the hub of the wheel. We are the person in charge of communication across all departments and also management and to the cast as well. During the show, we are in charge of making sure the lights happen, the set moves, sound happens, all the things. We are the person who's controlling all of that, as well as somebody who's backstage supervising the crew. So it is a multifaceted, multi-layered job and sort of a jack of all trades.
Long before a show starts its run, the stage manager is an integral part of the rehearsal process, says Donald Freed, in this case with Lynn Nottage's Sweat.
Everything begins and ends with the script. I got to read the script, read it several times, once just to read it as a person, not as a stage manager or an artist or anything, just to have an initial emotional feeling for it. Then I go back in and I read Lynn's stage directions so that I know what's happening light-wise, how she envisions the props, how she envisions the set moving, people entering and exiting, whether or not they're changing costumes.
Once a show is up and running, Karen Meek says stage managers and their teams put in long hours. Karen Meek climbs a ladder to her perch high above stage left at Great Comet. Actors perform throughout the theater, and Meek can keep an eye on them all. Once the show starts, she follows a musical score with post-it notes showing all of the lighting and tech cues. And by the time the opening number really gets going, Meek is calling cues to the lighting technician every other beat to make sure pin spots come up on cast members all over the stage.
Go, 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 go. Alex 68. Go.
Meek literally calls hundreds of sound and tech cues for each performance.
That's the end of the act.
All the stage managers I spoke with started out doing other things. Karen Meek was a costume designer, Donald Freed a dancer, Ira Mont an actor. So he was used to getting applause. Even though he doesn't get any now, he wouldn't want to do anything else.
I don't expect or look for praise or acknowledgement. I am here to support the shows I work on and the actors who do them, and that's what gives me the joy. And I'm very fortunate to have had a 30-year career in a profession that is not easy to get into and is not easy to stay in. I'm a lucky guy.
And Broadway is lucky to have their dedicated stage managers, Tony or not. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
We have a lot of folks behind the scenes here that deserve plenty of awards. We got some great people like director Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith, our managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden and David Bird. We'd also like to say a special hello to everybody listening to us today in the Philippines. DZUP, 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.